Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
It's Jake Volnick with you guys here from 7 to 11. We have Michael Bohm running the board as well. You heard him on the 2020s doing work behind the glass. Michael Markoch with us today. Now, we were sitting having a conversation, and I mean, camera's in front of me, ready for it to go at any point, right? Clips can be taken away. Did not expect, we're sitting at, 120,000 people going through and looking and reacting, and then I have comments from Ken and Anthony this morning. We have comments from Nick and JP. I mean, we got everything, right? Everybody jumped in on the tail of the tape from last night, in which, I mean, I think part of it was missed, the fact that I sat there and talked about the fact that I think Shador had the better game, but Dylan Gabriel, as we put it, looked cleaner in his game, which a lot of people just wanted to turn that into turnovers, which is a wild thing to just be like, oh yes, very simply, he clearly meant that Shador had more turnovers, but it's in the box score, guys. And honestly, it was part of the whole problem. Part of the whole problem is that everybody that's been talking about it has been like, well, look at the box scores. How are you going to tell me that a guy that threw an interception and fumbled the ball didn't look or looked better than Shador Sanders? It's like, I never said he looked better. Again, Shador played the better game. In their preseason matchups between Shador and Dylan, Shador played the better game. There was no question even about that, because Shador, yes, while he had definitely a turnover-worthy throw and had a lot of red flags that we've pointed to in the past, over the past week or so, I mean, the guy threw two touchdown passes. I thought he looked good. He used his legs to be able to scramble. It looked good from Shador. Again, he passed all of the eye test metrics. I'm looking at this entire thing from a different lens, though. Like, if all we're doing is going, look good to me, was throwing touchdown passes, didn't turn the ball over, it's conveniently how quick we all forget the evolution of DTR. And I do. I think Shador is much better than Dorian Thompson-Robinson. That's not the point that I'm drawing one-to-one. But it is funny how quickly we all just forget the fact that in DTR's last two preseason games, I think to compare him somewhere in the range of the work that Shador got in his 2+ quarters and the half of football that Dylan got, you can take the last two games that DTR played, and he was something like 17 for 21 with 182 yards and 2 touchdowns. Yeah, that looks great to the eye test. We all looked at that and was like, yeah, DTR is carving up the preseason. Ready to be a backup quarterback, if you ask me. Well, let me tell you, DTR was not ready to be a backup quarterback and could not step into that role and win football games. It's as simple. I can't just box score watch and be like, oh, this is great. To some degree, I can't even just look at the result on the field and trust only the eye test and say, oh, yeah, this guy's looking incredible. Again, Shador played great. I also saw several plays where he's turning his back to the line of scrimmage, spinning out of it, in which he would have been gone down as a sack. I mean, do we need to look back to Joe Burrow from last night? Do we need to go down that route? Joe Burrow tried to dance around the first team of the Commanders defense like Shador did, and got absolutely mollywopped in the backfield almost along his own goal line. It doesn't work that way when you're playing the first team defenses. It just doesn't. So as great as Shador can be, and as much potential as I think is there, to say that the guy that they drafted higher, that has been getting first team reps and has been ahead in the entire competition, operated better from a mechanical standpoint, and just looked better in completing passes and operating the offense, I think is the farthest thing from a controversial statement. Because I think that is the exact way to look at it. And it's wild because I'm not the only one to go and say it. Dan Orlovsky was on First Take on ESPN and had this to say.
I thought tape-wise it was better than Shador's. Tape-wise, it looked very similar to Tua Tagovailoa. The efficiency in how he moved, the ball placement that he has, the understanding of how quickly he was operating was a big deal to me. Going underneath center and running some of their play-action game, because it's not necessarily something he's done a lot in his past. For me, that was the big thing. And also, the ball placement was elite versus some tight coverage. His connection with Jamari Thrash, who, by the way, should be a starter for the Cleveland Browns, but throwing it away from defenders was elite. Shador's tape last week was really, really, really good. Really impressive. I thought Dillon Gabriel's was better because it played faster and more efficient.
Like, if we sit here and compare good and good, which is what we're doing, by the way, both guys looked amazing. It's okay that one looks slightly better in one area and the other one looks slightly better to the eye test. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm simply going into the fact that I think Dillon Gabriel passes the Browns test more than the fan test. Like, if fans are going to watch that, they're going to harp on the pick six, they're going to harp on the fumble, which we talked about the pick six, and multiple people have. Dan talked about it, Orlovsky, Lance Reisland, Coach Riz, who was on the station earlier today and is on with us every Friday, talked about the fact Deontay Johnson and Blake Whitehart did him no favors. There were no favors done on that play. Still a bad decision by him. It's a negative play for Dillon. The fumble. And probably more on Dillon than it is on Pierre Strong, or at least that's what everyone who's breaking down the tape has sort of alluded to. Yeah, he had negative plays. Shador had negative plays, too. That's all it comes down to, is that both of these guys, one of them, you know, went through and made better decisions. I thought it was funny today. Hey, Ken and Anthony jumped on the fact that, okay, well, it was a terrible take. They don't agree with the fact that he looked cleaner. And also bounced around the fact that Lima earlier this week on Monday went through and said it felt very similar to the way that we watched Shador. Their performances looked very similar. Okay, well, if they look similar, if I think one guy had the slight edge in one area, I just don't see how that's a crazy thing to throw out there. I really don't. I think it's a very clear cut in the evaluation of looking at these quarterbacks. It is not that wild. Right now, Dillon Gabriel's floor is certainly higher. And I think Dillon Gabriel, you know, I stick to the same thing that I've been saying. Maybe could be an NFL starter at some point, probably more reserved as a backup, but he's ready to go in that role, and he's closer to that than Shador is, to be the backup, step in, and help you win football games. I understand, that's not what Browns fans want to see. Hell, it's not what I want to see. Like, I feel like I've constantly remind people at this point that I want to see Shador succeed. Like, I've been wanting to see Shador succeed over and over again. I've harped that point. We've been on the Shador bandwagon for a while here. It's just, I can't evaluate a game and just go, well, I want Shador to succeed, so I'm going to see the things that make Shador, in my eyes, the more successful quarterback than Dillon Gabriel. I'm still trying to evaluate it, which is a question that I have across the board for people right now. And you can chime in at 216-474-0092. Is everyone legitimately evaluating these quarterbacks, or are they just seeing what they want to see? Because I can see it on both ends. Like, if anybody came out and said Dillon Gabriel played a flawless and just an amazing game, no, he had clear mistakes that he made in there, too. Now, aside even from the pick six, aside from the fumble, there were things that he definitely needed to clean up. The same way that if I take out Shador's three plays of running around in the backfield and I take away the could-have-been interception, there were still other things that Shador needed to clean up, too. Neither guy was perfect. They looked like rookie quarterbacks. They looked like guys who needed to go through and actually work and continue to improve on the things that they have done. And the things that they have worked on, they still have room to grow. It's one of the main reasons that we're out here and actually seeing Joe Flacco get the start week one. If these guys looked polished and were ready to go to start the season, one of them would be out there. If one was truthfully ready, I think the Browns would go out there and say, all right, well, you know, he's done everything to prove it to us. I don't really know that they had that fair opportunity. Really felt like it was Joe's job, but so be said. If they were that incredible and that perfect, it still would have happened at some point. They just haven't reached that level. So it's okay that these guys are slightly behind where Joe is. And it's okay that I think both of them performed well and one exceeded in, you know, the operational side of it. And one just passed the eye test. And there were things, obviously, that both of them did good and bad to both of those. But Shador won the eye test battle. Dillon won the operational, the mechanical, completing the passes, making the right reads battle. Which Kevin Stefanski loves. He's all on board for that. And yes, the pick six, the turnovers, they can't happen. I don't think in a preseason game, that's like the end all be all. You throw an interception, the play for the quarterback almost stops there in their eyes. Like if he returns it for a touchdown, you still made the wrong read, you still made the wrong throw. I really don't care in a preseason game if seven goes on the board. I think if seven goes on the board in the regular season, we're talking a much different thing. But you just don't care about the score in a preseason game. I just think, again, everybody is watching this on both sides. The hype for Dylan and the hype for Shador. Everybody is going through and just confirming and seeing what they want to see. Ignoring the good things from the other quarterback. Harping on the bad things from the one that they don't want to see. And again, attaching themselves to the good things of the quarterback that they do like more. Or at least the quarterback that is opposite of the one they don't like, which I think is much more the case, you know, in terms of not liking Shador and then just siding with Dylan. But it's just continuously over and over again the same thing. If we're going to evaluate the quarterbacks, let's not make the same mistakes that we've been making for the last, I mean, minimum in 25, 26 years as a football team in a fan base where you go through and you go, that guy looks good. I like him. Play him now. Get him out there. Make sure he's the one that plays. Like, it's the exact same thing with DTR. You weren't calling for him to start because you obviously had a quarterback in the room that fans were hoping were going to turn into something. But when you did see him out there, it didn't live up to the preseason hype. And the Browns learned that the hard way. Browns fan base learned that the hard way. 216-474-0092. Is everyone evaluating quarterbacks to actually evaluate them or just confirming what they want to see? You guys can also get to me on X at Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C, Jake, swing into our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Plenty of good stuff coming up for you guys tonight. The Station Buzz comes your way at 7:40. We're going to talk to our very own Cleveland Sports Beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, coming up at 8 o'clock. We have Get a Grip in the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to talk some Guardians there before that. It's a Blind Tier Tuesday. And we're going to bring in Michael Markoch later on for another edition of Change Your Mind. But right now, 216-474-0092. Is everyone evaluating quarterbacks or just seeing what they want to see? We're going to get to your calls as well. Joe's the starter. We talked about how long that could go yesterday. I want to talk about what happens if it goes the distance and what that means. It's all coming your way in 5 minutes right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick. With you guys until 11. It felt like a lot of people just wanted to, you know, hang out in the Shador Sanders camp and be like, how could they possibly say something that Dylan looked better than him when he threw a pick six? It's like, that's not the only play that existed in the game. The fumble is not the only play that existed in the game. The same way that if I sat here and just harped on the negative for Shador Sanders, yeah, I'd be a downright hater. That's why I said that I think Shador looked better than Dylan did in the eye test. Because he did. He was, you know, just, he threw a couple of really nice footballs. He got into the end zone twice, one time on a short field, one time not. He moved the ball, got the offense moving. Again, both guys had the red flags. Both guys look good. But I want to get you guys' thoughts in on this. Again, 216-474-0092. Let's go out to the phones. Coach Mark is in Shaker Heights. What's going on, Coach Mark?
Not much, man. I'll be quick. Listen, first of all, I train elite athletes here in Northeast Ohio. We put these guys in college. We put them in the NFL. So from Frank Clark to Denzel Ward, who I currently still train, to track.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Travis Kelce, you guys have come from our program, so I know what I'm talking about when I'm about to talk. Now, here we go. The issue that I have, QB talk, the issue I have with the QB, with the decision that he made, Dylan, when he made that interception, is the fact that it was two guys draped over that guy. So he should not have thrown that ball. That ball could have been thrown out of bounds, living back, make another day. But the problem is, he threw it, and that's the one issue I have. Why did he throw it? He's a Brett Favre type. I've had Joe Labus, Connor Cook. I've had guys, big-time quarterbacks, Kyle Van Treese from Northeast Ohio has come to this program. These guys, some guys make throws, even bad or good, because that's who they are. And you take that from them, boy, you might have a bigger problem. So he has a Brett Favre-type attitude, being that he was a gunslinger out of University of Oregon where everything was wide open. Now, number two, the issue I have also is the reason why this is such a big deal, there is a racial undertone, being the fact that Shador, if you look up top quarterbacks in 24-25 season, Shador Norian's come, his name come right to the top. Mm-hmm. So why does somebody in a Power 5 conference or Power 4, however you want to call it, who was the top as the QBs, how did he shrink down? They say something happened in interviews, whatever. So that must be some type of character thing. Well, it was never fully explained. So now, as a people, now we're like, hey, because we've seen this before. So it smelled and looked like something. I'm not saying that's what it is. Hear me correctly. But what I'm saying is, so now everybody's like, what was that about? How did he shrink down when he was the top QB? Because it was Shador Sanders, then yours, then Betts and everybody else. So how did he get passed up by everybody else who didn't do as well as he did? So then you see him in the NFL, he's not getting reps. That's what happens to guys who get drafted that late. But then when he gets the opportunity with lack of reps, he does pretty well. We're not looking at him like he did so well that he can't be blamed on some of the things he did wrong.
Right.
The thing that they're looking at, with few reps, he did, he killed it. Now, last point. So you look at when Dylan made that interception, character, two character issues. As soon as you threw an interception, nobody's even talked about this. He walks immediately to the sideline. It's preseason. You might be the third or fourth string QB, and you didn't even try to get the guy down. You didn't even try. Maybe I'm tripping because it's preseason. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. But you didn't even try. That's one character flaw. Bad. Now, after the game, the second flaw is what he said was very unnecessary. Young, whatever. They've been saying that same stuff when they played him in college. So I don't want to hear that he was talking to the reporters. That's another character. That's three character flaws. Because if one, you didn't tackle the guy. Number two, you said something inappropriately. Then three, you lied afterwards. So right now, I don't know if this guy's real or if he's fake. That's all I got to say.
And Coach Mark, I appreciate you making the call. I'll respond to it here. I think on the tackling thing, first off, on the pick six, I think that is more of a case of it being preseason football. And I think comboed the fact that Dylan was coming off the hamstring issue. It's the same thing of when he had the opportunity to run and he slid down 1 yard past the line of scrimmage when he had a route to the sideline. I think that is more about protecting and staying healthy where, yeah, in a real game, I want to see you go out there and at least try, you know, give an effort to at least, you know, get the guy out of bounds, trip him up, slow him down, do something, bring him down. I think in a preseason game, you have to realize that, especially after you've already dealt with an injury that has set you back a little bit, you're probably just trying to play for health there. And the 7 points on the board, while very unfortunate, don't actually mean anything in the record of the football team. And I'm sure that you stress to these guys at some point, like, most important thing is that you get out of this game healthy, right? The most important thing in our eyes is that you don't get hurt in this game. Like, we're going to evaluate the good, the bad, everything else. But I do think, like, I talked about Dylan yesterday. Right. In the comments that he made, they were immature, whether they were directed at Shador himself or the media. Those were just dumb comments to make after playing the preseason game that you did. You didn't go 18 for 18. You didn't go out there and blow everybody's socks off. You played a good game of football. Just don't go out there and talk stupid. And by the way, we'll continue to harp on the fact that, yeah, the interception was a terrible throw. Wide receivers, the route was bad, but the throw was also not a good decision. Like, you can't take that away. I'm not trying to just bury that or try to say, it's not his fault. No, probably about 50, 60% of the blame still does lie in Dylan Gabriel. You decided to release the football and you could have thrown it out of bounds. Every throw that comes off your fingers is your throw. If something, you know, if a receiver trips and falls down, that's one thing. Both guys are standing on their feet, even if the route was completely messed up. You still saw it developing through the football. All right, 216-474-0092. Todd is in Ward 1. What's going on, Todd?
50-60% his fault. Man, what are you talking about? He threw that to that dude like he was a receiver. So that was all on him.
In all fairness, it was supposed to be two guys with 10 yards in between them, and they were stacked on top of each other, and Blake Whitehart didn't put out his arms. I'm still giving him 50 or 60% of the blame there. I think that's more than fair. He shoulders the blame as much as Deontay Johnson getting shoved off his spot and Blake Whitehart getting absolutely jammed on his route.
He threw it to him like he was a receiver. So give me some room on the back end of this to give credit to the good quality work of the offensive line. Mm-hmm. But here's the answer to your question. It appears to me, based on all that I've heard, that most people are just seeing what they want to see. that is the truth, okay? However, I've been evaluating. I've been paying attention. And although Shador played well against a team that had not seen him play. They don't have any video of him as a pro. And they're the worst defense in the league, and they're backups. Whereas Dylan played well against a team they had been practicing against, who has the best defense in the league and the best bench as far as defense in the league. Mm-hmm. So Dylan performed better as far as I'm concerned. However, now that I'm at the back end, okay, that offensive line protected both of those dudes very well, and we're not talking about that enough. And you do remember, I'm sure, that I would not shut up talking about how much we need a deep, strong offensive line.
Yep.
So much that I'm grateful that you even kept taking my phone calls, because often it wasn't even the topic, and I was still talking about we need a damn offensive line, a deep offensive line. And that's why they were able to perform so well with the C-plus work that Shador put in by his own standard. As Shador said, the protection was very good. And the B work that I say Dylan put in, considering what he was up against. You know, that offensive line made them look good. So we should give some credit to that. But Dylan's performing better. He still got some room to cover. Don't throw to the defensive backs like they're on your team. Don't do that, Dylan.
There's a little more.
Not on your team, Dylan.
You're not wrong. Guy wearing the other color jersey, usually don't want to get him the ball. That's
usually, don't throw it to him.
Usually on the negative. Todd, I appreciate the call.
All
as
right,
always.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think the offensive line does deserve a lot of credit. Like, I think there were a couple of plays early on against the second stringers of the Eagles, which, again, it's a second string offensive line, too. So yeah, you take that what it is. And DeJuan got beat once, I think, if it wasn't Cornelius Lucas. And pressure came from the other side as well, where he got sacked twice. And overall, the protection was really good, though. Like, these guys were not fighting for their lives on a consistent basis. I think both of them can, you know, own up to that. But I think Todd brings up a good point, too. Like, yeah, Shador played against the starters. I mean, we might legitimately be talking about backups from the Eagles being on par with the Panthers starters that were out there in that game specifically, too. Like, J.C. Horn had the car accident leading up to that game, so he wasn't out there. I mean, you have a couple of guys that show a lot of promise, especially in the front seven for that team that were. Yeah, they played 8 to 12 snaps. And the backups were in, and it was the worst defense, one of the worst defenses in the league last year. Shador played against an easier defense on top of that, too. I don't think that's something you can just throw away and act like didn't happen. But Todd himself, like, he thinks Dylan played better. I'm telling you right now, with my own two eyes, I think Shador did put up the better performance. I just think that when we evaluate these quarterbacks, especially, we have to be so aware of the DTR effect. And it's unfair probably to label it as that. I can label it the Kenny Pickett effect. I can do anything that you want, okay? But in Cleveland, it feels like the DTR effect of that guy goes out there, he starts spinning a spiral, he's not throwing a ton of incompletions, and he looks good. Understand that Shador was set up to look good, as was Dylan. I'm not throwing that away either. Both guys were set up to look like they were going to perform, and they did the things that they had already shown they'd done well. And both guys impressed me. Like, from Shador, I wanted to see you eliminate some of the tendencies in college that made you, part of what made you fall, and I'm sure there's a lot of other things that made you fall, too, interviews, anything else. I don't know exactly what it is. Me and Coach Mark are lockstep on that. I don't know why that guy's a fifth-round pick. But some of the things that, were question marks in your game from the very start, if you were the second pick or, 144, the things that focused on wanting you to work on those. And I thought he did a fairly good job in eliminating that. A little bit too much running around the backfield, but overall, I think he eliminated trying to make too much out of a lot of the plays that he did. And he took the open receiver, and he distributed the ball, and he looked great in the pocket. And I think Dylan just answered the questions about, okay, well, if he's too short to play football, as everybody's just saying, he's not big enough, the size is a concern. Size didn't look like a concern in that game. I think they took the two biggest questions against them, and kind of put them to bed. And it's like, okay, that's not going to be the thing that stops me from being a successful quarterback in the NFL. I have things that are going to allow me to succeed. Again, 216-474-0092. Is everyone evaluating quarterbacks or just seeing what they want to see? Let's go back out of the phones. Stevens and Shaker. What's going on, Steven?
Not much. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just wanted to say, like, as far as, like, Cleveland fans, I feel like overall, I heard the one caller, I think it was Mark, he had said that a lot of Cleveland were a lot of people. Well, it wasn't Mark. It was the one after Mark. It was the one who said that a lot of people are seeing what they want to see. And yep. It was funny that after he said that he said Dylan Gabriel had the better performance. What happened to what we see as far as black and white. Like, one guy threw two touchdowns, no interceptions. The other guy had two plays where he one fumble, and then there was an interception. Now, he did make some great throws. I'm not going to lie to you. But we all know that Kevin Stefanski likes to script the calls the first you know,
the drive,
plays
yeah.
of the game. So after that, I remember saying in the barbershop, watch, let's see how he does after this, after the scripted calls are not going, you know, with Kevin Stefanski, where they're calling plays more liberally. So when Shador was playing, I saw him get stronger as the game went along. And I'm just saying, like, overall, I feel like us as Cleveland Browns fans, we've done this for years and years and years, where we've got given these guys all of these passes for doing stuff that is not great as far as quarterbacks are concerned. And that's all I really had to say, man. I love you. Have a good day.
Yeah, appreciate you, Steven, a ton. I mean, again, I think it is like it's a two-sided thing, and I do think that people are seeing what they want to see when it comes to both of it. I just think if we go through and like. Yeah, if we just pay attention to the stats, it's okay. Well, Shador ended in the end zone twice across, you know, two quarters and change. And Dylan Gabriel ended up in the end zone once, led two field goal drives, and also, you know, handed away 7 points and essentially two touchdowns or two scores over to the Eagles with the fumble and the interception. Those things matter. Like, I don't want to just act like those things didn't happen. It's what I said, you know, those things aside yesterday, I wasn't talking about just throw those things out the window. They didn't happen. I just meant outside of the two plays where Dylan clearly looked bad, and we're not arguing about that, I thought he looked clean. I thought he looked good outside of those two terrible plays that he made. But I don't think it's all about just, hey, you know, can you get to the end zone? Especially when we're talking about the difference between, hey, here's two quarterbacks that we want to see start games. And a lot of the drives that they led for both of them were against second and third team defenses. Those are things that I look at and I say, okay, yes, I want to see you move the football. I want to see you operate the offense, but I don't necessarily only care about do you get into the end zone? Do you lead a scoring drive? I'm looking at the individual throws here. I'm looking at everything and break it down on a play-by-play basis because I do. I think that if you just pay attention to how did he look against the defense in front of him and did he complete passes? Did he throw touchdowns? That's where you get into the DTR challenge. That's where you get into, hey, these guys are the only evaluation we make is how good did you play out there when the lights were on and did you win in the score? In preseason, that's not the focus. And none of these teams, truthfully, probably care about getting a win under their belt and just getting another notch for preseason victory. Now, if you're like, I don't know, the Bills going to get blown out 38-0, that might be a little bit of a bad sign. But at the end of the day, if the score leans your way or not, you're evaluating your players based on what they did, not just, did you lead me into the end zone? Again, 216-474-0092. Let's get one more in here. Joseph is in Menor. What's going on, Joseph?
Yes, I'm going to say this, and I think this is the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. When a quarterback is being made to be uncomfortable in the pocket, in the red zone, that tells me everything I need to know. One quarterback was poised, set himself, set his feet up, made the accurate throw in the back of the end zone, to the middle of the end zone. One quarterback under duress was able to roll right and direct his running back to go downfield and only put it where he can catch with one hand. And under duress and chased out of the pocket, one quarterback just threw an errant throw and turned the ball over. So people need to understand, when you get in these games, it's just not going to be pitch and catch because these defenses are going to send blitzes at you. They're going to take away your first read. They're going to...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, Join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Force you to be uncomfortable in the pocket. That's why Shador said that I want to be made uncomfortable to be uncomfortable in the pocket. In other words, you got to be able to play when everything breaks down. How do you play the game? And Shador just played a better game when the pressure was on, when he was under duress, when they put the heat on him. And that's the difference, because when you get in these games, these regular season games, these defensive coordinators, they coming after you. And if you can't think on your feet and make good decisions with the football, it'll be Jameis Winston all over again. Jameis Winston can throw for 500 yards in a game and lose because he threw two pick sixes the other way when they put pressure on him. He's not good under pressure. So if you're not good being uncomfortable in the pocket, I don't care if you complete six or seven passes to get down the field. It's just when it counts, when you get in the red zone. Can you put that ball in the end zone under duress? And Shador showed me he can do that. Now, am I going to sit up here and say he's going to be a superstar quarterback? I can't say that because it's not enough film on him yet. But if I had to pick between the two to back up Joe Flacco from what I've seen with my eyes, I'm going with Sanders.
And, Joseph, I appreciate the call. We're up against it, but I appreciate you making it. I give Shador a ton of credit for how he handled pressure in the pocket, especially in the red zone. Like the slight adjustment sidestep where he threw the touchdown to, I think it was Caden Davis over the middle of the field, is perfect. I think both of them performed well against the blitz. I think Shador was like 6 of 7. Dylan was 5 of 7. They both looked good in that. And yeah, Dylan made mistakes, and that's going to happen. And especially at a quarterback of his height, pressure in the pocket is going to cause those things. I'll give you the edge. Shador looked good there. I'll fight back on the fact that I think that's the only thing that matters. I think you got to get down there first, too. And I think Dylan did that better. All right, we're going to talk about Joe Flacco coming up here a little bit later on, as well as the station buzz in 5 minutes. But 2020 time with Mike Markoch. Well, let's get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest today with the station buzz. All right, let's kick things off. Plenty of Browns here for you guys today. John Fanta of Fox Sports College Basketball over there chiming in on the conversation as a Clevelander. What the fear of moving on from Joe too quickly in this season would actually mean.
If things don't go well week one, because if a rookie's debuting week two, it means things went miserably week one, and those problems may be beyond the quarterback. And that trip to Baltimore, I mean, that's a death knell. And it's why week one for me is a must-win for the Browns, and it's a must-win for Kevin Stefanski. But I think if you change things up that quickly, it just sends a whole unsettling vibe across your locker room.
Yeah, if we're going off of this idea that, well, the Browns named him as the week one starter, and didn't give him any room behind that. Now, I don't think there was really any messaging sent here. I think they're telling you, yeah, we're not going to name a starter for week two because who the hell knows what happens in week one? Joe could get hurt. Joe could throw 9 interceptions on 9 passes. And in that case, we're probably not starting him again. Not that he's actually going to do that. He's fine. Like, you don't go just naming week two starters, being like, hey, we're going to give Joe the start for the first 4 weeks for the very latest here. And then, you know, we'll evaluate after that. You're not going to do that early on. You're naming the week one starter. But John's absolutely right. If you go through and he is just a, hey, you get the start for this week and your job's on the line every week that you play, and they could legitimately sit him down by week two, that is the worst handling of a quarterback that I think I've ever seen. You can't just give the guy one game. Now, he should look fine against the Bengals defense because, well, it's the Bengals defense. But hey, I'm not looking to move off of Joe. I mean, he's got bare minimum 4 games. We said it yesterday. If you give him anything less than 4 games, I really don't know what your plan is. And the message to the locker room that John hit on would probably be the biggest issue. It's like, hey, guys, we got you a starter, a guy that you can believe in, a guy that you do believe in, and Joe Flacco, who's been here. And, oh, by the way, yeah, we're not going to start him for week three because, well, we're 0-2 against two teams that could be playoff teams this year. Well, we're projected to have 5.5 wins. Yeah, we're just going to kick him out. We're going to throw you to the rookies. It's like, wait, hold on. What happened to this season being about winning? What happened to you guys committing to actually trying to win football games? I've watched Joe the entire time in training camp. That's the guy we believe in. It'd be a god-awful message if that's what the Browns would be sending, but I really don't think they would. Let's go to Ken and Anthony. Had John Greco, former Browns offensive lineman, on today. And with Joe named the starter, he talked about what that means for the rookies in the regular season.
It's all mental. It's all in the meeting rooms. So these young guys just really have to make it an emphasis for themselves to study that iPad or playbook. God knows what they have now. But in the film room, on the field, walking. I know it sounds kind of corny and cliche, but going through the motions, acting like you're in there, and doing all the mental reps that you can. Because when you're in there, there's no, it's live. There's no hand holding. The record counts. The season's on. You're facing other teams' best. And then you're facing a firestorm from the media and questions. And we think, these guys think it's tough now. Just wait till they get in season if they're in there during preparation. So they have to do everything they can in the meeting rooms, guys, and in the playbook to get themselves prepared.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's going to get a lot tougher as the reps to actually go out there and throw the football are just not going to be there. The game action for Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, not going to be there. I do kind of wonder if this is a worse thing for Shedeur than it is for Dylan at times. Because, again, I've consistently pointed to the things that I think Shedeur needed to work on, which is the know when to throw the ball away, know when not to run around in the pocket. And that feels very instinctual to me, right? Not something that you just go and you're like, oh, well, I watched Joe not do it, so no, I won't do it. It's like a fight or flight reaction. I feel like game reps are the biggest thing for that. It's one of the main reasons that I wanted to see Shedeur play on Saturday. And then, obviously, the competition with Dylan there, too. But I wanted to see if that gets better from a week-to-week basis of, hey, you worked on it more throughout the week. You got some game reps under you. Can you stick just in the pocket and continue to deliver the football and roll out when it makes sense, but keep your head downfield and keep your body squared up downfield? I don't know how much you can work on that during the I'm going to take mental reps and just watch how these guys prepare and watch how they do it. A lot of it for me is I know that part of it, according to a lot of people, is the mental stuff for Shedeur and the playbook for him. I do wonder how much of it is the other stuff that he's able to eliminate too. But make no mistake, this isn't good for either quarterback. You'd much rather just be out there getting game reps. You don't get awarded that in the regular season, though. Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, on with Baskin and Phelps today, talking wide receivers and Isaiah Bond in the mix. What's that mean for Deontay Johnson?
Deontay is probably, someone that they'll have to take a look at. And I think he needs to have a really good week this week, because when you bring in an Isaiah Bond, it does change the dynamics of who's going to make the roster. And if Deontay can go out this week and have a really nice week and maybe do some good things in the game, then I really do think that he will keep his chances alive of making the team. But I do think he's one of the guys that they're going to have to look at and say, do we have a spot for him now that we have Isaiah here? So big week for Deontay, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild. The former Pro Bowler, who even dating back to last year when he was on Carolina, was a productive wide receiver. And obviously for him, it's a lot more on the other side of things. It's not, can you produce on the field? It's, can you keep the right mentality to give me your best effort on the field every single time that you're out there? But it's wild that in a barren wide receiver room, that Deontay Johnson is even on the potential cut list. But when you break it down, you think the Browns are probably keeping 5 or 6 wide receivers. Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman are going to be there. A 3-year, $3 million contract. They're not cutting Isaiah Bond. And then Jamari Thrash. And you start having the conversation about a guy like DeAndre Carter. He's a special teams specialist. That's what he is. He's a returner. And you have to roster him as a wide receiver. Are you going to be able to actually make the room for Deontay and add a 6th wide receiver? Or does that spot go over to an additional running back, an additional tight end? Do you want to keep an additional lineman just in case? Because we know injuries have stacked up there. But is thin of a room cutting a guy like Deontay Johnson? It is a little puzzling, because you think you just try to get as much talent as you could out there. That doesn't necessarily seem to be adding up directly one for one to that. All right, let's squeeze one more in here. Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com, on today with Nick and JP on Afternoon Drive. Talk about what it would mean to be missing Denzel Ward for the defense.
I think he's their second best player. And I've been, my 4 years about now, I think him and Miles have been as good or better than they've ever been at practice. So for what they're trying to do in that man coverage and that defensive line, now I still think they'll be a good defense with or without Ward, but I think they can be a top 3 defense with Ward.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Denzel Ward, if he did have to miss time, and again, early reports are that hopefully he is not going to miss time and the injury is not supposed to be that significant. So I'm hoping that he's going to be out there. If he did miss time, I don't think it would necessarily kill the Browns defense. It would definitely take a major hit, though. With MJ down, knowing what that secondary would look like, I'd have a lot of concerns for that team playing man defense. We're going to ask Daryl Ryder all about it coming up here in about 5 minutes as he joins us to talk everything Browns on Overtime with Jake Volnick.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.